Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Circus Podcast, episode 112.
That's Norwegian.
Now, we don't usually put out podcasts every week or weeks back to back, but this is a special week and a special podcast.
This is a special week and a special podcast.
This is a special podcast because we're announcing a brand spanking new show. Spanking, kind of weird to say. A brand new show. A
brand new show that has been in the works for over a year.
The show is called Reflex, and it's a collaboration with master juggler Jay Gilligan and Captain Frodo Santini. And we're bringing this new one-man juggling show to Brooklyn for a month, from late January to early February. And later in the episode, you're going to hear a conversation between the four of us about why we created the show, the background behind it, the ideas behind it, and sort of like a behind the scenes, basically.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I think, Jay, as you'll hear in this episode, Jay emailed us. It was like right when the pandemic hit, and he was listening to one of our podcasts, like the one we released right after everything shut down. And he was like, I have a idea for a one man juggling show. And Josh and I are both like, sick, like awesome. I mean, I was like, wait, a one man juggling show. And then I was like, oh, yeah. Jay's pretty sick.
I can't say how excited I am for this, though. Like, I, having been talking about it for a while, I really think this is going to be something extremely special. And it's kind of in the vein of like Michael Motion. If you saw him, I grew up seeing Michael Motion shows in Connecticut. I think that's where Michael Motion is from. He's a famous juggler who did a lot of one-man stuff with bounce juggling and contact juggling. But Reflex is sort of more ambitious even than that, I would say, in what we're trying to do as far as what the show is about and the different kinds of juggling styles and props and machines and inventions that Jay is bringing all the way from Sweden. Our
doorman is going to hate us. We're shipping it all to our apartment. Our doorman is going to be like, what are all these boxes? Because, oh, it's a juggling machine.
The website's now up. You can visit reflexshow.com and see some photos and learn more about the team and the show and get your tickets. It's going to be running in person for 4 weeks. At MeToo 580, which is sort of an interdisciplinary art space in Brooklyn, near where we live. And then the last week of the 4 weeks, we'll be streaming it online. But we'll talk more about that later in the episode during the podcast. Right now, we'll do our typical pre-show. And, you know, the other thing that's really going on is our final 2 weeks of Beyond Babel in New York City.
Yes, it's insane that we've made it to this point. I can't really believe it. I am excited because the four new understudies that we trained really to go on in case of injury, but also to go on further in the life of Beyond Babel past New York, are going to go in on this coming Sunday and next Tuesday, which I'm super excited about. I have been in their position. I have been a cover of a performer in a show. And they told me, you are definitely going to go on October 11th, which is my birthday, because, you know, like, it's nice to have one show that you know you're going on so you can invite your friends and family to. So I did. I invited everyone. And then they pulled it away from me at the last minute, I think like a day before. So that sucked. And I know how it feels. So I definitely wanted to make sure that these new understudies had the full opportunity to go in. It's so different actually going into the show versus doing a run through. So I'm super excited for them. I'm super excited for everyone to see these last 2 weeks. It's just an incredible show.
We've gotten really great feedback about the current version of the cast. A lot of people have seen the show again to come see the new folks dance in it. People seeing it for the first time. And I'm getting a lot of personal comments about how good the energy is and the chemistry between Liv and Hugh, who are currently in the lead roles.
I think one thing that we're thinking about for Reflex that we've learned from now our circus show this summer, which was Stars Above, which was outdoors, and then now Beyond Babel, which is an indoor show off Broadway, is the ticket buying patterns for shows is very, 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 very different than pre-pandemic. And especially in New York, I'm not sure about other cities, but obviously we can look at New York.
Well, you've been going down the internet rabbit hole.
Yes, I did a case study. If we were still in school, I would have killed this, you know, a project. But I did a case study. Essentially, I wanted to see what people were buying tickets to and how far in advance. And by checking, so it was I looked on a Wednesday night for that coming Saturday show.
Saturday night.
Saturday night is like the notoriously the best night for ticket sales. So what prompted this case study was that on Wednesday afternoon evening, Omnium Circus, which you guys have heard us talk about before, which was a new circus that was Big Top 10 did show that was opening outside of DC November 18th, announced that they were rescheduling and canceled their performances all November 18th through January 9th or whatever it was supposed to be.
So like 2 weeks basically before their 2 month run, they pulled the plug on it.
Which is shocking, right? Because they had raised the tent. They had everyone there for rehearsals. They had all the performers. I'm assuming they had costume, lights, sound, all of that stuff ready to go. But I had been wanting to go see the show because our friends are in it. And our past podcast guest, Noé España, was one of the creators of it. So, of course, we were very excited to go see it. And I had been looking at different shows to go, like which one I wanted to go see with Josh and the ticket availability. And at each show, it was pretty available. The tickets were not selling very well. You know, 1,700 seats to sell three times a day is like on a Saturday and Sunday is a lot. Like I would be nervous. And I even mentioned this on the podcast with Noé. So when they announced closing or rescheduling, I was not so surprised because the ticket, if I were in their position and the advance sales had been what I had seen, I would also have been very nervous. But then that prompted me to go see what every other show that's currently running on Broadway and the big off-Broadway shows were looking like. So it was a Wednesday night. I looked at every single show, which was crazy of me.
How many shows there was? Like 20, 25 shows?
Yeah, I think like I looked at 25 shows and I looked at their seating chart for Saturday night. So again, it was like, you know, Thursday, Friday, basically 3 days in advance of the show since everyone's buying late, last minute. Saturday night should be technically the best sold show. I looked and I was like, oh my God, I would have pooped my pants if I were over half of the producers of these shows. Because other than Hamilton, Aladdin, Lion King, Wicked, Six, the musical, Hadestown.
That's it, right?
That was really the top seven shows that were not concerned, shouldn't be concerned at all about tickets.
Shouldn't be concerned on a Saturday night.
On a Saturday night, right. I didn't look in the future, but for the Saturday night, most other shows were doing, looked like 60, 65% capacity and like maybe
or less.
A quarter of those shows. And then, so a quarter of the, a quarter of the shows were doing okay. A quarter were doing 65%. And then the rest of it, we're doing about, 50%. And some were like, I mean, some big shows I looked at and it was like the center orchestra was sold. The side orchestras were all open and the mezzanine balconies were completely unsold. Which is just insane and just goes to show how there just aren't people buying tickets. But people are going to experiences and things that aren't shows where you're just sitting in a Broadway house, I think. So hopefully for Reflex, which is such a different type of show, it's in a very small venue. It's a weird experimental kind of show with a one man juggler that will bring people. And it's a low ticket price. That's the other thing. The ticket prices are still so high.
Yeah. I mean, months and months and months ago, we talked about on the podcast, like what should we be strategizing for our own shows post pandemic? And like you mentioned, Beyond Babel was this thing we created pre pandemic. It's an indoor theater show with all the normal trappings of that. And we sort of had a reaction to the pandemic of, okay, let's make an outdoor circus show where you don't have to be tested. You don't have to wear a mask. Just come as you are, socially distanced, outdoor, bring your own seating, and really try to make something that's a post-pandemic product. And in a way, Reflex is that too. And you'll listen to us talk more about it later. But, you know, One Hedge is this concept of the one-man show. So it's not like there's other castmates who can get Jay sick. He can basically isolate himself if he needs to. It's not reliant on that many performers or that many technicians or crew in case of illness. Like you mentioned, it's a very small venue. It's 60 seats maximum. So we basically, if we sold out every single show, we'd be selling like 2,500 tickets, which is not that many. At least not compared to other people who are trying to sell thousands of tickets a night or thousands of tickets a weekend.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like all these theaters that have like 1,700 seats, like you have to then find an audience that's 1,700 people a night.
Yeah. So we're looking at that kind of many people over a month. And then the last week of our 4 weeks is going to be live streamed. So what does that mean for us? Our version of live streaming means we'll have a 1 to 3 cameras pointed right at the stage that are streaming on Vimeo. I think it's $20 is what we're charging for the stream. And you can watch it live. If you come 5 minutes later, you click on the link 5 minutes late, you'll join 5 minutes late. You can't go back and rewind it and rewatch it. It's just like watching a show, but on your computer. And I feel like we've learned a lot from watching shows during COVID. And I think we can actually make this one quite compelling. And I think there are a lot of people who aren't in New York who would want to see it. And this is a good way, inexpensive way to catch the show if you can't be there in person. So I definitely think it's much better if you're there in person. There's things you won't be able to experience, including how we're outfitting the lobby and the venue specifically for this. But doesn't mean it's not worth it. So I don't know. We're trying these new strategies, I would say. Reflex is really a test of a few things. It's a test of people are interested in this genre, which I actually am very confident they will be, because I think Jay is one of the most amazing performers in the world. And the show is really unique and special. It's a test of balancing the streaming versus in-person sales. And it's an experiment with how you can build a one-man show post-COVID, which doesn't rely on so many moving pieces that could be disrupted.
The idea of a one-man show in a genre that isn't traditional theater typically does relatively well in New York. People like this type of thing. People like mentalism. People like magic shows. The one-man shows do interestingly well. Like even some theater shows that we saw, and right now I'm blanking on the names, but it was like Michael Urie show.
Buyer and Seller.
There was that other, like, it was a British show that we saw. It was like The Brightest Little thing.
Oh, or, yes. The one with all the little notes.
Yeah. But again, like, people are intrigued by it because it's like, what is a one man?
Derek Delgadio's show, In and of Itself.
Yes, In and of Itself. Yes. And Darren Brown, The Secret, which was off Broadway and transferred to Broadway for a bit. And The Illusionist, obviously, that's four people versus one. But again, this like different genre that's not just traditional theater. So I think it'll be really good. But one other thing I wanted to mention about tickets was also Big Apple. They're in a similar boat into the like
Big Apple Circus.
Yeah. Which is being revived by Nick Wallenda. And I would say he is doing an amazing job from what I can see on Instagram and social media. He has really tackled the like reimagined, reinvented, reinvigorated Big Apple Circus. And
it looks like those things are
but
happening.
It does actually feel different and new. He has a stage, he has a full curtain that looks beautiful,
crazy lighting rig.
I mean, I am very excited to see it. He has a whole billboard in Times Square right now. Like, does that translate to new people wanting to go see Big Apple? I don't know. From what I could see, it looks like kind of
the first week or two,
but who knows? But from a person who is just looking at it from the optics of the new look, he's doing a really good job.
I also wanted to say we missed a show on the last podcast where we were listing off like all the shows that are in town. Circo Hermanos Vasquez, one of our favorites, is here from now all the way until the end of the year playing in the Bronx and then in Queens.
If anyone knows the founders of that circus, hook us up.
Working on that. I don't think we've talked about it.
Oh, you
but
are?
I think I know who to contact, but we're going to try to get somebody from Circo Hermanos Vasquez on the show in the near future.
We finally got Cedric Walker, and I feel like him and the Universal and Circo Hermanos Vasquez were my two re-entry into the circus world. So I feel like once we get Circo Hermanos Vasquez on the podcast, then I think I'll feel like, wow, we did it.
So I guess the theme is jury's still out a little bit on ticket sales. Having said that, Babel has very limited tickets for the final 2 weeks because obviously it's the final two weeks. So if you want to see the show, now is the time to grab those. Reflex tickets just went on sale today on reflexshow.com. There's a lot of availability because they went on sale today. So go grab your ticket. You can basically pick any night at this point, although we have some specific shows that have more or less based on group sales and things. But now's the time to get your tickets. We can't wait to see you at these shows. I hope you enjoy our interview and conversation with Frodo and Jay. They've both been past podcast guests, so if you're a regular listener, you'll be familiar. Jay, of course, also has his own podcast called Object Episodes, and Frodo has his own podcast called The Way of the Showman. They're two of my favorite other podcasts, and if you like this, go check those out right afterwards.
Yes, and if you like our podcast, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, tweet us, or email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com. And without further ado, here's our BTS, hashtag BTS, I don't know. I sometimes feel like I say things that like really make me, you know, a 33-year-old versus like a cool 20, 25-year-old.
20-something.
Yeah, but behind the scenes, kind of look into the creation of Reflex and the origins of where it came from. I think it's very interesting and I hope you guys enjoy.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening to our behind the scenes podcast for the new production Reflex. My name's Josh Avner.
And I'm Lindsay.
And we're here with two of our creative collaborators, Jay Gilligan and Frodo Santini.
Hello, how are
Uno.
You?
Uno, that's one in Spanish.
Uno, yeah.
Wait, did I miss? I just took Lindsay's part. Oh, yes.
But we're super excited to talk to Jay and Frodo because we've been secretly all working on this project for the past year, over a year. And it's finally to the point where we can talk about it and go behind kind of what we've been doing for the past year. Jay, do you want to talk about where this all started?
Yeah, it's been over, quite a bit over a year, actually. I think it was around June or July of 2020. And you had invited me on your podcast, you know, the Hideaway Circus podcast, we had a really nice interview. And so I've obviously been listening to your podcast since you first put it out. I've listened to every episode. So after we did our episode together, I was listening to your podcast over the in the time of Corona, you know, after the pandemic started. And it was really funny because I was listening to you guys were talking about the Corona and the pandemic in your life and how that was going to affect your work because you were doing Beyond Babel. And then I really remember you were talking in one of the opening of the episodes where you were just thinking like, hey, where's the future of shows going to be? What are productions going to be like in the future with Corona? Even the quality of like, can we have more than one person on stage? we're not even talking about audiences anymore, right? We're talking about performers. And then I kind of had a funny thought privately when I'm listening to your podcast in my ears, and I thought, hey, I'm just one person, so maybe that's okay. I don't need to social distance from myself. And I mean that sounds so silly, but the thing was that there was another conversation in my head around the same time, which was that for years and years, I had been wanting to do a solo show, kind of a proper solo show. I've been doing lots of solo shows and lots of different projects in my life, but I'm getting a little bit older and more mature and reflecting back on the past. And I have a young son who's really awesome guy. And of course, that makes you think about your life and all these things. And so for many years, I was thinking, oh man, maybe I should do like a greatest hits. Like I've been around a few years. I've been juggling for 35 years. And I'd say as soon as I started juggling, I mean, I did my first show when I was 8 years old. So it really has been that many years of performing. And I was looking back over my career and I thought, oh, it'd be so fun to do like a little retrospective and maybe take the pieces that I've done over the years that work the best and just compile them into a really nice little show that would be super fun for everybody involved. What something happened around the time I was listening to that podcast episode when you were talking about the pandemic, which was that for about 15 years in my life, I had wanted to have a machine that would juggle three balls mechanically. And I didn't want there to be any visual feedback or pressure sensors or computer brain like feedback. I wanted it to be a mechanical device that would throw a three-ball cascade in the air. So for about 15 years, I've been making prototypes and trying to get this machine made and designing and meeting people and talking and searching and building and, well, spending too much money and everything. And finally, I collaborated with a guy from Las Vegas. His name's Drew. And Drew and I finally got to make a machine together that would do three balls cascade in the air. And then as soon as I got that machine and I saw it working in front of me, which was like a dream after 15 years, I really freaked out. I really like lost my mind. And I was like, wow, this is even cooler than I had imagined it would be just to experience it in person. And I got super crazy about it. And I thought, oh, it would be so nice to share this with everybody in the world. Like, I wish everybody could see this machine because there's just something about it that's really special. And because it's not computerized, it's analog, but it's still a machine, but it's doing a human skill, but it's such a weird, it was human, but it was not, and like all these weird things. So I thought, oh, it'd be so cool if I made a show with this. And suddenly I was like, ah, maybe I should make that solo show after all, right? So just kind of out of nowhere, I sent you an email and it's like, hey, I'm listening to your episode. I had an idea I'd like to tell you about. And I was so shocked that I kind of like, at least looking back on it in my mind, it's that Josh had emailed me, you know, back instantly and was like, call me. And I was just like, first of all, in my mind, that was weird that anybody would just immediately be so enthusiastic that it wasn't even like, yeah, like write me an email, like, let me know in the next, you know, few weeks or whatever. It was like, call me. And then I called you guys. And the crazy thing was, honestly, like, you were just enthusiastic. And that was kind of weird, like unnerving. like the more I talked, the more, I don't know.
The more excited you were as well.
And then I was just like, wow, this is really rare in my life. I mean, I have to say in my career that there is such an instant kind of energy rolling with ideas of talking with producers and creative partners and whatever. And so I was really kind of taken aback. I hadn't really thought, you know, far enough ahead of like, well, if I email these people and call them, you know, what if it works out? I hadn't thought that far ahead. I was just like, oh, maybe I'll pitch this random idea because like I just had a vibe, and then somehow you caught that vibe too, and it was the right time or it was the right situation or something. Or at least that's how it went from my side. And so that's a little bit about how these things got started, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I remember getting that phone call or that message. And in my mind, I just instantly thought of Michael Motion talking about a one-man juggling show. I instantly made the connection to how we could sort of reinvent this for now. But between you, me, and Lindsay is really not enough, you know, of a team, particularly when it comes to creating a cohesive story and taking...
I was also like, a one-man juggling show. Like, how do we make it more interesting?
And taking these tricks, elevating these tricks and ideas to something much more meaningful and deep. And I think that's where Captain Frodo really came in. How did you make that connection?
Yeah, let me tell you the story about Captain Frodo, and then he can jump in, kind of introduce him and pull him into this mix. So there was another little story which I haven't told yet, going parallel to these two other stories about how the show started, right? The podcast, and then also my juggling machine. So I got this juggling machine, and I was like, man, everybody should see this machine. Like, it's so cool. And I was so excited about this machine for about 3 days. This lasted about 3 days. And I was so excited. And I'm going to make this new show all about this machine. And I'm going to have all these other machines, because I have a lot of other machines already in my life and my work and everything. And I thought, yeah, that's going to be the machine show. So then I started to think, oh, what if I could present the machine in a new way or a different way than I would normally do? And then I had this idea because, I mean, the machine is in one way pretty extremely experimental contemporary circus. I mean, it's pretty far out in terms of this spectrum between, we could say, traditional or contemporary, whatever. But then I had this idea and I thought, well, what if instead of presenting it like I usually do in a very deconstructed, minimalistic kind of way, what if it was more of a traditional presentation? Maybe I'm almost like being P.T. Barnum or whatever character, you know, greatest showman, trendy, you know, whatever images we have in society right now about that kind of accessibility. But the payoff is going to be this kind of flipped, like, unexpected twist that I thought would be really fun. And so I started thinking about that. And that's also in your podcast, you were talking about this idea of having a circus show that combined traditional and contemporary, which ended up being Stars Above eventually. I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but that was also another connection. And so when you guys were so enthusiastic with me on the initial contact with the email and the phone call and stuff, and then I was in this position where it was like, you were totally on board for the idea. And I was like, oh man, what did I do?
What's like, yeah. Now I have like, to come up with the idea.
Yeah. Like I pitched this idea. So now it has to become real. Well, there was just one person I thought of immediately where I was just like, I can't do this alone. I mean, I want to work in a new way. I want to have a new process. And I want to have this kind of eye towards facing outwards for the audience to really care for them, to bring them into the work in a different way. And there was just one person that I could call, and that was Captain Frodo, because I met Captain Frodo about 21 years ago in Oslo. And even back then, I really honestly, sincerely have to say, I saw him performing and I was like, whoa, this dude is doing something different. Like, this guy is on a different planet, or he was on a different trip somehow. And then everybody else I saw around me, he really struck me, and I never forgot it. So we happened to be performing together in Las Vegas a few years ago. I was like, hey, man, Frodo, you want to go to lunch, man? And we actually went out to Ronald's Donuts, and I bought him some donuts. And we started talking about art and life. And I really remember he said one really funny thing, which was he came home from that lunch and his wife had asked him and said, oh, that's cool. You went to lunch with Jay. So where are they living in Vegas, or what are they up to? And Frodo was like, I don't know where they're living. And she said, what are you talking about? You guys had lunch for like 3 hours. And he's like, yeah, we were talking about art. Like, we were talking about performing. Like, we didn't get around to like where he was living, you know? And that just kind of is symbolic to me of immediately this connection. And I knew from that lunch with him that I wanted to work on a project with him. And I was racking my brains. And this is a couple of years ago. I'm like, oh man, I would love to work with this dude. So as soon as I got off the phone with you guys, I was just like, okay, I know who I'm calling. And then I called Captain Frodo, and here he is.
And here I am. Yeah. No, that was, but it was, to me, it was also indicative of this mutual interest in each other's work. And that was that I was on Josh and Lindsay's podcast as well. And at the end of it, they always ask, so who do you think you should talk to next? And I said, oh, well, I would talk to Jay Gilligan, because of such and such. I can't remember exactly, because he's an exciting guy and thinks deeply about art. And then Josh said, well, that's already going to happen. We've already recorded that interview and it comes out, whatever it is, next week or whatever. So we were already kind of tuned into each other at that point. And I had seen your work a couple of times over those sort of decades, and seen at least one of your full shows and seen stuff of yours on the internet. And me too, being a fan of juggling, and I'm a fan of all kind of content. And I'm just, because I've functioned as a director within several shows, tuning the acts that came in, or if somebody was creating a new act that was going into the show, I was doing that work. So I kind of used to working with lots of different things. So I could see that in all the work that Jay has, he had a show that's kind of like it's highly technical or whatever. And he said it's like an introverted style in some of the material. And I can deeply appreciate the work that he's doing. But it felt to me a little bit like what he needed to do was to bring the audience along on the trip, because he has gotten so far down a rabbit hole of deeply interesting work. Like, what is the story that we could tell that brings the audience in, so that when he does one of these extraordinarily beautiful images that he does of juggling balls with videotape attached to it in a fan and things that are mesmerizing imagery, when he does that, when he then turns on this machine, how do we make that so significant that they too want to think about it or talk about it for 3 days, like Jay was when he saw it? Like, so that was how I kind of felt like we needed to approach the show.
Yeah, we definitely had this idea in the show that we wanted to give the audience the sensation of looking at juggling in the way that I look at juggling. That was one of the main goals. And I remember the first time I called Frodo then that next day. And so I call Frodo and I'm on the playground and he just immediately is just like, yes, I'm in. And it was another one of those moments where I'm like, okay, this is awesome. Like, it was sincerely so awesome. And I was so sincerely lost after that, because again, it was just such a big deal for me. Like, I'm going to ask Frodo to collaborate with me. And then I call him, he answers, and he says yes. And I just hadn't thought farther ahead than that. And you were just so supportive and enthusiastic about the idea. And I was just overwhelmed. I really didn't know what to say. And then we started to talk on that very first phone call about what the show could be. And I think, Frodo, you had just listened to my podcast with Eric Oberry, Object Episodes, and which is about juggling and juggling ideas and art. And juggling, you had also history. Seen my, yeah, juggling history. And I think you had just seen, you just watched one of my, the TED Talk thing on YouTube that I do about juggling rings. You were just so enthusiastic about the project. And you're like, man, you know what, Jay? You should do a show about that. Like, the show should be about like all your research with juggling history and culture and all these new ideas that you, all these new discoveries. A lot of it's with Eric's work, research, and then we're collaborating together on these ideas, and we made this podcast together. And Frodo, you were just like, yeah, man, you should make the show about that. Not only about juggling, but about deep, deep juggling knowledge and history and discoveries of cultural, you know, all these, all this journey of juggling, of how it came to be as it is today.
The thing which we are communicating now in this show is not the specific details. Those details are there to tell it. But what the show really shares is one of the deepest passions that I know of. Your passion for your craft is unparalleled in every aspect of it. The history and the practical and the technique, thinking about it in the context of art, and the depth of that is what I always have seen in your work, and that we're now trying to capture in this show. It tells 4,000 years of juggling. And I know that one of the titles that Josh sort of subtitled, that Josh had thought of, was sort of From the Mind of Jay Gilligan. And that's kind of what it feels like to me. It's to open up that mind a little bit. And if you do, which I now genuinely believe that we have captured, we've created something which now allows you that when you're doing your final acts, and I do think that it that they will see it from your point of view. And I know that's for those few people in the inner circle who have seen runs or heard bits, it's a powerful thing. It really is.
I do remember this conversation though, Jay, when, because you were like, I talked to Frodo and, you know, he said this, that we should look at the TED Talk and talk about juggling my passion. I was like, yes, that's what I want you to talk about too.
Yeah, totally.
Because it felt so obvious that, like, from a person who doesn't like juggle, well, I like juggling now, obviously, but it's not like I was like, oh yeah, juggling, it's my thing. Right. But as I learn more about it and like the intricacies of it, and like, you showed us a video of you like walking on a bike, like a, what's it called? A unicycle. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And then I read the description of how hard it is and how you had to figure it out. And I was like, that's so cool, you know? And so the instinct of like, this is the coolest thing because you're so into it and you find out all this insider information is what it feels like. And then you were like, oh, and then Frodo said this. And I was like, yes, that is it. You know, it's, but to you, it probably feels like, why do people care about this? But it's like the coolest part of it. Of
No, I have to say, like, when you, I absolutely remember when you told me that, Lindsay, and I mean, I never told you this before, but when you said that and you say other things about the show that are like that, that is my, I mean, that would be my dream. I mean, it is my dream to do that show. It is the dream to do the show that we're doing. I just never thought I would be allowed to. I think the cool thing is about Frodo's work on the show, and also with, you know, Lindsay, with your help with Josh and all the feedback you gave as well, that we have a project here where we are digging down deep into, you know, the stories and the histories and kind of the framework of these things. But then these things actually do exist. You know, the machine exists and like the juggling exists. And when you experience those things, there's a deep truth to them. And I think the stories really help do uncover that truth in terms of how, you know, what those things mean to me and what I see when I do them and when I share them and when you see them. I think it really does connect through in a real way and not just as a something that sounds good or, you know, sounds pretty or something.
Because Jay has this incredible high technical skill, there's always something beautiful and truthful about watching somebody do masterful skill, whether somebody's playing a Bach piece on piano and it's just effortlessly presented, that is just something beautiful to watch. And then to have the stories in there that now helps place those things into context, then that's what's interesting with the work that we've created, is that it is not, here's a bit of talking, here's some juggling. It's the talking and the juggling is meaningful only when they are together.
So the first time that all of this international socially distanced work will be coming together will be this winter in Brooklyn for the show's world premiere at Me Too 580 in Brooklyn, New York. The show will be running for 4 weeks, starting January 24th, running through February 20th. And the last 2 weeks will also, in addition to being live, also streamed online. So if you can't make it to the States, you can't make it to New York, you can still catch the show, but it is only live. So it's not pre-recorded. If you tune in 2 minutes late, it's like showing up to the theater 2 minutes late. So you got to make sure you're watching it with everybody else who's watching it at the same time. And honestly, for me, one of the things I'm most excited about is how this will inspire people. But I think this show in particular will be reinventing for a lot of people what they think juggling is, and showing that it's more than just a hobby or a passion or three balls that you can get like with an instructional book. You can really turn it into a very unique visual art akin to music or dance or theater. And I think Jay and Frodo have really found a new way to, I think the word we've been using in our marketing is unravel, you know, 4,000 years of this really amazing gravity-defying craft.
Yeah, I just want to say that this show, this collaboration that we're doing, it's, for me, it's literally the show of a lifetime. It's the show that I never got the chance to make before, and that you're giving me this gift of working together, and that we're going to get to make this thing happen in real life. It just blows my mind. It's really literally my lifetime's work. And it's all coming together into this one
moment of this show. And I just couldn't be happier or more excited or more. Yeah. I just can't wait to go and show it to you and have it exist out there in the world.
Well, you can get your tickets now for those of you who are listening and you made it to the end of this episode, this little podcast preview. We're going to be releasing more fun content as we get closer to the performances. You can get your tickets at reflexshow.com, both for in-person and online streaming. Lindsay, Frodo, anything else you want to leave us with to get some folks, get some butts in seats and eyes on laptop screens?
I do also think that this is a kind of reinvention of what people thought about juggling. It's not easy to come by this kind of information. And in fact, it's like some of this information, as you will hear from the show, is directly told through, oh, and then I spoke to this historian, and then I spoke to this guy, and that's why I sit with this piece of information. So it does, in a way, feel like this is part research paper too, so that you will hear stuff in here that you cannot read anywhere else yet. You know, it feels like a treasure and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, certainly for the juggling and circus community around the world that I hope will be tuning in when the show is actually happening.
You know, and of course, Frodo and Jay and I are all jugglers of one kind or nature, Jay being the real professional one and me being the hobbyist, and Frodo having it sort of as one of his many, many skills. But Lindsay, for somebody who is not a juggler, why should they come and see the show?
For someone who can't juggle, I feel like after all this, I should be able to juggle by the end of this show, three balls.
That's my guarantee. Embarrassing. I promise. Yeah, I promise that.
Look, I'm not a fan of one person shows. I'm not a fan of magic shows. I'm not a fan of juggling. This is all pre, you know, working on this show. And I always want to make a show that I would want to go see, because if I'm not going to want to go see it, what's the point of working on a show? And I want to see this show so badly. You know, I think it's such a cool show, and it's a one-man show, but it's has so many elements to it. Like there's so many props that you use, and there's so many things that you juggle, and there's so many stories that you tell. And I think with the addition of Frodo, who is such a good storyteller, that combination is awesome. Like, I love a show where you go on a journey and you end in a different place and you feel stuff, you learn stuff, and that all is encapsulated in the show. So I think for people who are like, why would I want to go see a one-man juggling show? It is a one-man juggling show if you break it down to its most simplest form, but it's so much more than that. And it's like the best of the best. Like, when are you ever going to get to see that? So yeah, I'm super excited. And the lighting is going to be sick and the whole atmosphere. It's all about the whole experience, right? It's not just like one thing. So I want to go see the show. And usually you know, we make good shows, knock on wood. So I think, yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel really with this one here, we're feeling like it is, to say that, yeah, it's one man juggling. It's a little bit like going, I don't know, I'm not so interested. It's just one guy playing the guitar and a bit of harmonica or whatever.
Right.
His name is Bob Dylan. You know what I'm talking about? It's like going, it doesn't cover it to say what it is that he does, because this show, it doesn't, you say, like kind of jokingly at the end, I hope that I'm interested in juggling, or I hope that I can juggle or whatever. But the cool thing about this one here is that the show is more about people just having an intense passion, and that passion, we cannot necessarily connect directly to the juggling, but we can connect to the passion of somebody who has found a deep interest in their life. And then to explode that, to you go, what does the world look like to this person? And that thing, that's like the core of what makes a novel or makes a movie interesting. It's that you, all of a sudden, the movie is about a mathematician or whatever, and you get the insight into their mind, and all of a sudden, this is a beautiful, riveting story because you care about these problems. That's what this show does. And that's why it is not primarily for people who are neither jugglers nor are interested in it. The people who are jugglers will see other things that the other people didn't get, because it's filled with technical detail and with historically accurate stories. But the thing that drives it home to everybody, including my wife, is that when you hear the stories and you see it, you're genuinely moved by the passion and content of the narrative of the show, how it drives it together. And that's what's particularly special about this show, I think.
Jay, anything you want to leave our listeners on before they snag their tickets and come see you in person?
Yeah, I just want to say also, we haven't really talked about this yet on this kind of behind the scenes take right now, but I'm super pumped to get to New York City and eat some donuts. New York City Donut Plant, carrot cake, kind of my favorite. I'm not soliciting donations right now. I don't think that's like legal maybe on air, but if people want to bring gifts of donuts, I'm not going to say no.
Yeah, I don't know if people can hear the crinkling of this bag, but I did have a pre-recording Dunkin' Donuts donut. So
this is why we're all working together. This is why this collaboration works, is because
for the love of donuts.
Let's leave it there. Hashtag for the love of donuts. Thank you everybody for listening to this. We'll see you at the show. And that was our interview and show announcement with Jay Gilligan and Frodo Santini for our upcoming production, Reflex.
If you like our podcast, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Twitter tweet us, or email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com.
And don't forget, you can get your tickets to Reflex at reflexshow.com. And Beyond Babel has 2 more weeks in New York City. You can grab those tickets at beyondbabelshow.com.
Yay, come see our shows. Have a good week, guys.